Good morning. Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Christina Spouty, and I am serving as worship associate this morning. I am joined in welcoming you by Kathy Kearns, a member of this congregation who is leading worship today. Lay-led services are a time-honored Unitarian Universalist tradition. We believe that the Sunday service is best reflected in a variety of voices and experiences.
This morning's chalice lighting comes from Christine Robinson. We gather this hour as people of faith, with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning, in celebration of the life we share together.
Staying true and staying kind. What's there to think about, right? Being true to ourselves, our beliefs, speaking our truths, just being who we are, our authentic whole selves, and being kind with ourselves and others seems simple. But I think we can all think of times when it hasn't been so simple for whatever reason. Given that we're not much short of an election, we can probably think even more readily of times we've felt these two aspirations come into friction. For me, I've noticed that staying true and staying kind are not in balance sometimes if I'm really tired or having a bad day. But more often, I notice that there can be friction when either it's a really personal matter or one that I'm especially passionate about, one that really strikes a chord. What the issue or matter isn't important in the grander scheme of things. I think that this is something most of us can say we've experienced at some point. Topics like the presidential election, women's rights, or marriage equality might be the one for you, the kind that you have a gut reaction to or that raises your blood pressure when someone disagrees with your own view. As I've been reflecting on this service theme, I've been imagining what the world would be like if we were all true to ourselves and kind with others at the same time. Being true to ourselves, being genuine, gives us the chance to speak our truths and to live them out loud, which is so important to us as individuals living in community. It's a validating and empowering feeling to be able to do that, and to be received in kindness by others, to be able to share ourselves without worry about what people will think or what they will say, is equally validating and empowering. I can't help but think that if we manage to do these two things, being true and being kind, together in a balanced way more often, that we might just be able to help heal the world a little more. No one has the whole truth. We each only have a part, and what is our own piece of the truth might not be the same one that someone else knows, but that makes their truth no less whole and no less valid than our own. It just makes it different. Maybe being mindful of that would help us to be a little more kind to each other and open the way for more communication, change, and healing. In the spirit of prayer, come into this place. There are healing waters here and hands with soothing balm to ease your troubled days. Bring your wounds and aching hearts, your scars too numb to feel. Your questions and complaints are welcome here. Rest a while. Let the warmth of this community surround you, hold you, heal you. When you feel a bit stronger, just a bit, notice those who need you too. They are here. They are everywhere. Weep with them. Smile with them. Work with them. Laugh along the way. Pass the cup. Drink the holy fire. Take it with you into the world. We are saved, and we save each other. Again, again, and yet again.
Our first reading this morning is taken from an article, some excerpts from an article by Martin Copenhaver with the catchy title, Enduring All Things, Even Each Other. Not long ago, I was invited to preach at a denominational conference whose purpose was to encourage civil discourse in the church. I do not believe, however, that what we most need in church is more civility. To be sure, civility beats some of the alternatives. Nonetheless, we are summoned to something larger than civility. First, we are summoned to confession. We have not loved one another as God first loved us. Contrary to the still more excellent way Paul commands us, we have not been patient or kind. We have insisted on our own way. We have been irritable, resentful. We have rejoiced in the wrong, particularly when our enemies have been wrong, and we have not rejoiced in the right. Let us confess these things. More than this, we are summoned to forbearance. Paul writes, "Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things." Forbearance is a much richer word than civility. Civility has to do with the thin crust of appearance. Relationships marked by civility can remain shallow. By contrast, forbearance connotes a depth of relationships. A while back, I preached a sermon in my congregation in which I asked, "Is there someone in this church you can't stand? Is there someone here who has betrayed you or disappointed you or who offends you or angers you? Someone you don't want to have any more to do with? Someone who just grates on you?" If there is not yet such a person here for you, then that is an indication you need to draw closer, because it is when we have encountered people that we would normally not choose to associate with. It is then we have a chance to become more than just another pleasant gathering of congenial people. It is then we have a chance to be church. After that sermon, a relatively new member of our congregation said, "Gee, I don't think that sermon was addressed to me, because there is no one here in this church like that for me." Well, she's been around us a little longer now, and a while ago she said to me, "Remember that sermon I told you I couldn't relate to? Well, I think I get it now. I said, good, now God can do something with you. After all, it is when we recognize our deep differences that we then have an opportunity to be something more than civil, an opportunity to forbear one another.
Our second reading this morning was written by a seminary colleague of mine, Jim Foti, who lives in Minnesota, one of four states this election that has a marriage amendment on the ballot. As a former newspaper journalist, I sometimes get asked by friends to look over their letters to the editor or op-ed submissions. I recall reading one particularly biting commentary piece and then trying to figure out how to ask its author a difficult question. Is your goal to express your feelings, or is your goal to change minds? Like many people, I've had strong urges both to vent and to persuade ever since the legislature put the anti-marriage and voter restriction amendments on the ballot. I've been furious about the resources and attention diverted to these manufactured conflicts, and I have wanted the world to know. I wanted a yard sign to announce my position from my balcony, and I felt oddly oppressed by condo association rules forbidding such things. I put a vote no sticker on my car, and I'm planning to add one that says vote no twice. My spirits are lifted daily by all the decals and yard signs and banners, symbols of equality-minded people on every highway and in every neighborhood, and I have wanted to be part of that chorus. And yet, I have had to ask myself some difficult questions. How many times has my own mind ever been changed by a bumper sticker or a yard sign? Zero. How many times has my mind been changed by conversations or by meeting new people? Countless times. Is my goal to express myself, or is my goal to persuade? So my path for the next 5 weeks in this season of falling leaves and discouraging poll numbers is to go both routes, to sing out with signs and bumper stickers to raise awareness and inspire the faithful, and also to pursue the hard work of one-on-one interactions with people of a different view. If a majority of Minnesotans vote for equality and freedom in November, it will be the directness of human experience that will have guided them.
I grew up in a Unitarian church, and I can thank religious conservatives for making sure I got introduced to Unitarian Universalism. When I was 4 years old, my family moved from Los Angeles, California to Tulsa, Oklahoma, which in the 1960s had about 250,000 residents. As you probably know, Oklahoma is in the Bible Belt. My mom later told me why they had sought out the Unitarian Church. When they lived in California, they did not attend church, nor did they give much thought to being involved with the church. But after they moved to Oklahoma, when they would meet new people, about the second or third question they would be asked was what church they had joined. And when they said they didn't have a church, of course they would get an invitation to a Sunday morning service. After a few weeks, my parents finally decided it was time to get proactive, so they started looking around for a church. They found one to their liking, All Souls Unitarian Church, led by the Reverend John Wolfe. Here in a town dominated by Christians, they found like-minded souls who believed in the concept of liberal religion, the idea that each individual should have freedom of religious thought. And I think it gave my mother some pleasure to be able to tell those who inquired that she had joined the Unitarian Church, which in some people's minds was worse than being unchurched. I give you this detail because I want you to appreciate the cultural context in which I was introduced to Unitarian Universalism. If the Kent Church is your first UU church, you might assume that all UUs are not only religious liberals, but political liberals as well. Let me assure you that is not the case. It certainly was not the case at my childhood Unitarian church. Sure, we had hippies like the minister's children, but we also had men who wore suits and ties to church every Sunday, were leaders in the business community, and voted for conservative politicians in both political parties. Of course, some things have changed in that church over the years, but it is still a place where you can find people with diverse political views. It would certainly be a mistake to assume that everyone in the congregation would vote for Obama for president. This experience had a profound effect on me, as it led me to separate liberal religion and liberal politics and to see that the two do not always need to coincide. It also led to another important insight. I may have a sharp difference of opinion with someone on some matters, but share their views and values in other areas. In other words, when we meet someone with whom we disagree, it is quite possible that we nevertheless share common ground on some matters. This may seem like an obvious idea, but isn't it easy to forget? I know I sometimes forget this simple lesson. For example, we may see someone at a Tea Party or Obama rally, and we may think we really know all about them, but do we really? The human tendency to want to label things, including people, is important because it can affect how we respond to others. One article I read about church conflict cautioned people to think about how they discuss disagreements, pointing out we often use words and metaphors like battle that emphasize confrontation and dominance. At Summer Institute last summer, and for those of you who don't know, Summer Institute is the summer family church camp that is sponsored by our district. At Summer Institute last summer, Reverend Meg Riley cited research that also makes this point. She described a study in which people read one of two reports about a crime in a fictional city and were asked to suggest how to solve the crime problem. The reports were the same, except in one, crime was described as a wild beast preying on the city and lurking in neighborhoods, whereas in the other, crime was described as a virus infecting the city and plaguing neighborhoods. It turns out people were much more likely to propose solutions that focused on enforcement and less likely to suggest solutions social reforms such as improving the economy or education when crime was described as a beast. In short, our choice of words, including how we talk about and label others, matters. How can we respond when someone expresses values and beliefs that differ from our own? I had an experience that really challenged me a few years back to stay civil with someone who challenged my views in a hateful way. At the time of our last presidential election in 2008, a father came to drop off his son at our house to play with one of my children. The family used to live near us. While I did not know him well, we had spoken a few times, and he had always been cordial. But things changed that day when he spotted the political signs in my yard. He began ranting about different liberal politicians and the horrible things they advocated, such as killing babies, favoring minorities, and giving money to the lazy poor people. He criticized the teachers like me who were overpaid to the detriment of the public. He railed against the non-Christians like me who were ruining the country and repeatedly stated how disadvantaged white men are in the world today. It was clear I had a Rush Limbaugh fan in my driveway, and even though I was standing several feet away on my front porch, I felt threatened and a little scared. His tirade went on for at least 15 or 20 minutes. As he raged on, I thought about his ex-wife, who had converted to Islam after their divorce, and his statement one time that he wanted to be a police officer, but it didn't work out, so he was still working as a manager at a fast food restaurant. I was desperate to find a way to de-escalate the conflict. I knew it was useless to try to debate the merits of his points. So I took another tack. I focused on what he was saying and looked for points of agreement, also pointing out gently points of divergence. Let me hasten to add the points of agreement were few, but I worked to identify them. After all, aren't we all bothered if someone tries to cheat the welfare system? So as one example, I said, yes, I can agree with you that it's wrong for people to cheat and take benefits they're not owed, although I added that it's actually hard to find people who have cheated the system. Yes, it's unfortunate that so many unintended pregnancies happen, Wouldn't he and I both agree that the best thing would be to reduce unwanted pregnancies? Yes, I was a Unitarian Universalist, but my religion teaches some values I bet he would endorse, like respecting other people, and so on. I would like to say that we ended with a good laugh and he apologized. The outcome was less positive. He did not back down from his views or apologize, but his anger did dissipate over time. And as he calmed down, he became less extreme in his tone, then finally left. Given how worked up he was, it seemed like the best possible outcome. We may feel a need to defend ourselves, especially when someone criticizes our view. Although we could respond in kind and be equally confrontational and critical, I'm guessing most of you would not take that route, at least most of the time. Alternatively, we may take a softer approach in which we attempt to appease the other person, especially if a difference of opinion makes us anxious. But as author Bors points out, a danger in simply appeasing others is that we may end up trading our integrity for harmony. So he advocates a third way. He suggests we be firm and steady in expressing our views while showing compassion and respect for others. This approach would also seem to reflect our Unitarian Universalist principles, with their focus on respecting the inherent worth and dignity of all people, showing compassion in human relations, and a responsible search for truth and meaning. At times, though, we may be wanting to do more than explain ourselves. Our spiritual paths might be taking us toward justice-seeking. That is, we might be trying to work to bring the world more in line with our vision of a fair and compassionate society. We may want to, as James Keelahan says, stand our ground. When we encounter people with a different vision, our explicit goal might be to persuade them to see the matter and to see the matter in a different light. Jim Foti reminds us that having one-on-one conversations with a person who holds a different view can sometimes provide an opportunity to change the other's mind. These moments, when we find ourselves amidst diverse perspectives, also provide an opportunity for our own spiritual growth. They may provide opportunities to practice forbearance, extending love to those with whom we disagree. Martin Copenhaver suggests it's a blessed irony that the ones we cannot stand are the ones who can teach us the most about God's love. Thich Nhat Hanh suggests we try to engage in a true dialogue in which we are open to hearing the other and open to the idea that we might change. It strikes me that having humility and maintaining some doubt about whether one's own views completely capture the truth can be a good thing, as it may help foster in us a sense of openness to others' ideas. Thich Nhat Hanh also suggests we practice understanding. He says, and I quote, "When Gandhi said that love is the force that can liberate, he meant we have to love our enemy. This is the message of Jesus. But how can we love our enemy? There is only one way to understand him. We have to understand why he is that way, how he has come to be like that, why he does not see things the way we do. Understanding a person brings us the power to love and accept him. And the moment we love and accept him, he ceases to be our enemy." It is important for people to feel that they are staying true to their values and are walking their talk. People should speak up when there is a wrong to be righted. And stating our views may influence some of the people some of the time, particularly those who do not yet hold strong views. At the same time, we can choose to express our views in a way that either creates distance or allows for some connection with others. All of you have probably witnessed more occasions than you would like to recall where differences of opinion were not expressed in kind and respectful ways. Regardless of the actions of others, we can make our own choice. Through our actions, we can, as the Buddha stated, be the change we want to see in the world. Our benediction this morning is from the Reverend Jack Bryan. Go out into the world and greet with love and compassion every man, woman, and child you may meet. Return not evil for evil, but strengthen the faint-hearted, support the weak, and help the suffering. In all things, look beyond the letter to the Spirit, making your lives a living witness to your faith, and bring honor upon yourself and all creation by working for justice that the whole world may know peace.